I am Jeanette Brown, Editor-in-Chief at ClearNet, and really excited to welcome you to our very first podcast, of which we hope there will be many more. But this very first one is going to be focused on interviews, which we know are top of mind for many anxious applicants right this very minute. I've got Graham Richmond, co-founder of ClearAdmit, on the line with me. Graham, do you want to give a quick background as to why you can speak knowledgeably to interview protocol?
Sure. Thanks for having me, Jeanette. I, in addition to co-founding ClearAdmit, have worked as an admissions consultant in the past, helping thousands of candidates get into the very top business schools in the world. And I also used to be an admissions officer at the Wharton School of Business, where I interviewed candidates and reviewed files and have a very in-depth understanding of the interview process for MBA admissions.
So to dive right in, we're going to do a four-part series because there are so many different types of interviews and different ways to approach interviews that we thought it would be helpful to break things down into chunks. To start out, I want to just do the basics. Graham, can you explain to applicants who are maybe just starting this process, what's the difference between an open interview and an invited interview?
Yeah, that's fairly straightforward. Some schools allow candidates to simply sign up for an interview. There are a number of examples of that, Kellogg being one, and Duke another. That, you know, essentially, you just, as you're applying to the school, you create your online application and you can sort of tick a box and say, you know, I want to set up an interview, and they will reach out to you and make that happen. There is some nuance to it in that some schools actually only allow you to do that in the beginning of the season, and then they get kind of too busy and require that you wait to hear from them instead of being able to just kind of sign up and come on your own. The Tuck School at Dartmouth is another school that has just an open interview process where you sign up as well. On the other side of the coin, you have schools that do interview by invitation only. The most prominent that come to mind are Harvard Business School, Chicago Booth, the Wharton School, and there are a number of them, Stanford. And in that case, the main difference is that you cannot interview unless they ask you to. It's kind of a don't call us, we'll call you sort of theory. And in essence, the interview invitations typically come after the school has reviewed your file and developed a point of view about whether they want to hear more from you and get a better sense of your candidacy. And so in most cases, that takes several weeks post-application for you to hear. And again, many of these schools will just offer the invites all in one batch or in a couple of batches so candidates know when the day is that they're going to hear. So that's the basics of it. It's sort of like, you know, you can either sign up and go on your own, or you have to wait to be invited.
Now, going back for a moment to the places where you can sign up and go on your own, you'd mentioned Kellogg and Tuck, I think Emory's, Goizueta Business School, and Fuqua and Kenan Flagler among the others that offer this. Why is it an advantage to sign up when you have the chance to sign up? Does it send a message if you do or if you don't? Do you have advice based on taking advantage of that open period at the schools that do offer it?
Absolutely. So for starters, I think that if a school has an open interview policy, you should absolutely be signing up. And my point of view on this is that you never want to apply to a school that you wouldn't be thrilled to attend. And if you're thrilled to attend a school, then you want to do everything you can to maximize your chances of admission. And one of those things in the case of open interviews is to sign up and get yourself to campus or wherever they're conducting interviews to make it happen. I think, you know, in the case of a school like Tuck, there's a purpose behind it. It's not just, we have open interviews because that's the way we prefer to do it. It's because they want people to come to campus and sit down with a student and learn more about the program. You know, Tuck is a kind of small, intimate program, and they really do view it as a sign of your interest if you, you know, bother to make the trip and get yourself to campus and see what Hanover's all about and meet some students face-to-face. So I absolutely suggest signing up for an interview if a school has an open interview policy.
So returning now to those schools that don't have an open interview policy, schools where you can only interview when and if you are invited. these break down into a couple of different types of interviews, am I right? Or multiple types of interviews. What are the best ways of preparing for, or first off, what are the differences between a blind versus non-blind interview?
Yeah, that's a great point. And I think it's one that, you know, it always kind of boggles my mind. Candidates put so much time and effort into preparing their applications. And then there's always a subset who, I guess, fail to do their homework when it comes time for the interview in terms of understanding what to expect. And you're right, some of these schools offer quite different approaches. So a school like Harvard Business School has what's called a non-blind interview, where the person interviewing you has already read your entire file, has made notes on it, and comes into the interview with a set of questions that are somewhat tailored to your candidacy or the concerns or questions they have about your candidacy. Obviously, they have a larger kind of script that they try to follow, and they want to ask questions in certain domains. But again, this is someone who's read your file and knows the whole story. Taking another school like, say, Chicago Booth, that would be a blind interview where the person that interviews you is unaware of the rest of the materials that you've submitted. They might have kind of a fact sheet, you know, with your name and maybe test scores or some of the very basics, but they don't have the file. They haven't read your essays. They don't know your story. And so in many cases, a, you know, blind interview is kind of starting from scratch. You're kind of pitching them on your resume, who you are, why you want an MBA, that kind of thing. So these are really different, and you need to know that before you go in to an interview. You know, I think the one thing to keep in mind is that even in the case of Chicago Booth, where the school, you know, has invited you to interview, but the interviewer doesn't know much about your candidacy, you can go in with somewhat of a kind of comfort in knowing that you've been selected, right? So even though you're not sitting down with someone who knows your case inside and out, you are sitting down with someone who knows that the committee felt that there was something in your file that merited the interview. So obviously any kind of invitation-only interview, it's always a great thing to have because you've been selected. But again, you got to know the difference between these two because your approach would be quite different when you're sitting down with someone at Harvard Business School who knows your case kind of inside and out versus someone who hasn't seen your file at all at another school.
So maybe this is a stupid question, but if you're going into a blind interview, do you bring up things that didn't come up in your application?
I think it's fair game. I think that obviously I always recommend that people sort of start with the basics, right? You know, no sense in, you know, offering up little details of your file that didn't, you know, that weren't kind of big enough to make the cut when you were selecting content for your essays and such, right? You've got to start with the basics about who you are and what your goals are and some of the key experiences that you probably would have spoken about in your essays or other application materials. But obviously the benefit of an interview is that you can do more than that. You know, you can add details that maybe didn't find their way into your file. But I wouldn't make those front and center. I would not view this as like, well, the committee's read my file. They invited me to interview. Now I'm sitting down with this person who doesn't know anything about me. And so I'm just going to throw a whole bunch of kind of random facts at them or things that didn't make my file so that when all this is put together, they get an even bigger picture of me. It doesn't really work that way. You know, the interview is kind of a discrete event and you have to make the full case in the interview.
So even when it is a non-blind interview, you want to be sticking to key message points that you should have established as you were preparing your overall application?
Yes, although in the case of a couple of schools that do non-blind interviews are like MIT Sloan and, as I mentioned earlier, Harvard Business School, and they're going to be probing for further detail than what was in the file. So if you were to just kind of repeat back exactly what was said in the application, that you would lose points if you did that. But again, you're absolutely right in that you don't want to kind of reinvent yourself. You do want to stick to the general messaging. And in most of these non-blind interviews, they still will ask you a few what I would call kind of softball questions just to kind of get you going or hear your story or hear you kind of telling your story in person versus, you know, what you had to say in the application essays and such. So, yeah, the key feature, though, of these non-blind interviews is that they an admissions director at MIT Sloan once described it as kind of peeling the onion. You know, they want to just kind of get more and more detail and dig a little deeper than what was in the file.
Terrific. I am going to turn now to some of the more special ways that certain schools approach interviews. So you've got your schools that do either invitation only or open interviews. You've got resume blind or non-blind interviews. And now I want to look at some of the permutations. So one that comes to mind, of course, is the relatively recent arrival on the scene. It's been around for a few years now, of the team-based discussion. And Wharton and Ross come to mind immediately as schools who have embraced this kind of scenario. As a Wharton alum, you were not there when they were doing the team-based discussion, but I suspect you paid some attention to your alma mater. What can you tell us about Wharton's team-based discussion?
Yeah, it's actually a really interesting process that they've put in place. It was done actually in conjunction with an operations professor who's and a kind of leadership professor who knows a lot about kind of HR and how to assess folks. And so I think the other thing that's unique about Wharton is that people complain a little bit about a team-based interview because there are a lot of variables in play when you're put in a room with four or five other applicants and then, kind of left to have at it. But it does actually do a pretty good job of replicating the learning team experience that's a feature of the first year curriculum at Wharton, where, most of your study and kind of homework assignments are group oriented, and you're often put into your learning team, which is pre-assigned. And so I think the school has kind of two goals. One is this notion that I mentioned earlier, which is like how to better assess applicants and make better admissions decisions. But I think there's also a side that's sort of focused on the applicant and giving the applicant a sense of what the Wharton experience is about. At the same time, there's a lot of stress out there in the applicant pool when it comes to the team-based discussion, just because, folks worry that, what if I have sort of one jerk in my group who kind of derails the entire discussion? And for those of you who don't know, the way that the team-based discussion works is the five applicants are in a room with usually a second-year student, sometimes an admissions officer, who serves as kind of just an observer, taking notes and such. And they're given an assignment, which they get in advance, which is to think about a specific problem, or in many cases it's related to Wharton in terms of coming up with an idea for a program that Wharton should pursue, or a course that Wharton could create. There's all kinds of permutations of this, and it tends to vary from year to year. And the team is meant to kind of come in to the interview with a lot of kind of ideas based on, the kind of independent thought that they put into it prior. And then they're sort of supposed to hash things out and arrive at sort of one solution. And so there's a lot of stress around what if my solution or solutions don't get picked by the group. And so candidates, there's a lot of work that has to go into having a successful team-based discussion and knowing, how to behave in a group and how to maximize your admissions chances while, kind of putting your best foot forward and such.
If you had to err on the side of being a good team player or really showing how much you had to offer, which way would you go?
I would go with good team player. I think that one of the real fallacies with the team-based discussion is that people come in thinking, let's take the example of where, students have to come up with an idea for a course or a Wharton project to pursue abroad, and they think that they've put all this time into coming up with an idea, and they make their pitch, because the team-based discussion typically starts with each candidate getting a couple minutes to have the floor and make their pitch. And people come in thinking, gosh, I've put a lot of time into this, and I really want my pitch to be the one that we kind of go with and flesh out. When the reality is that I think you can do a better job or kind of earn more, let's just call them admissions points, if you're just kind of paying close attention to what everyone else is saying, being a good listener, trying to ensure that each member of the team is contributing, or even helping to kind of put ideas together and come up with something innovative, you know, as a team, and just fostering the dialogue and discussion that could lead to a successful team-based discussion. So I would absolutely say that the person who kind of comes in is the bull in the china shop, shouting from the rooftops about their idea, that's not going to fly very well with the admissions team. And even if they win the argument and get their idea chosen or something, it's not going to likely fare well for them in the admissions process.
And we'll move away from Wharton in just a moment, but I did want to also ask about, so Wharton is known as a data-driven school. How important is it to show your awareness of this as part of the team-based discussion? And do you have some concrete examples for how interviewees might arm themselves with data, if that is indeed important?
I mean, I know that Wharton has this kind of quantitative reputation and, yeah, is definitely data-driven and prides itself on that. In the context of the team-based discussion, however, I don't think it's a question of coming in with a set of calculations or some kind of prepared, numbers that could foster or kind of bolster, your argument. But I do think that Wharton values research. And if they give you an assignment that involves coming up with an idea for a global experience, which is Wharton sends students abroad to do different consulting projects. And if they've asked you to come in with an idea, it would certainly behoove you to read about the actual kind of study abroad and global kind of business opportunities that Wharton students typically pursue. Because if you were to come in and pitch an idea that's sort of already been done or is kind of somehow out of the scope of what they might typically do and in a way that's just not feasible or something, that would suggest that you didn't bother to familiarize yourself with what the school has on offer. So I think I might just replace data-driven with kind of research-driven. And so, yes, if you don't come into the team-based discussion having done the proper research and learning about whatever it is, that they've asked you to kind of propose, then you could be in big trouble.
Point taken. So Ross, the University of Michigan's Ross School of Business, introduced its own version of a team-based exercise in 2013, although it differs some from the Wharton experience. How familiar are you with the Ross experience, and can you give applicants who are preparing for that just sort of an overview and then some advice?
Yeah, so I really like what Ross has done with their team-based discussion. I'm calling it team-based discussion, but obviously that's kind of the Wharton name. But Ross's approach is actually a little bit different in that there's not the sort of upfront preparation. So I guess technically Ross's term for it is the group interview. Their version of this exercise is a bit more open-ended in the sense that, I think it lasts about a half an hour. They spend, I feel like 10 minutes or so just kind of letting everyone get to know one another in the group. And then the group is given these exercises to do, which are on the spot. So they're not at all, in the case of Wharton, folks come in with kind of a planned presentation that they pitch to the group, and there's this kind of back and forth that ensues. In this case, it's much more spur of the moment innovation exercises. So one of the things that they've done is they give each participant a couple of random words to weave into kind of a story that the group has to put together. So, the group comes together, they each kind of share their words and come up with something. So it's more of a kind of live sort of teamwork exercise. I really like it because it doesn't allow for a much in the way of preparation. I mean, you can prepare in terms of how should I behave in a group? How can I work well with others? But you can't prepare in the sense of researching something and making a presentation on it. It's interesting. I think that if memory serves, when the candidates are given the words, they They first kind of pitch, they kind of come up with a little story using their words, and then they have to come together as a group and kind of weave all the different stories together. And so again, it allows for sort of some individual airtime, but also some really fun kind of teamwork. And again, like Wharton, I think it's designed to let students have the experience of working together and getting a feel for what it might like, what it would be like to be in the MBA program at Ross, which is a terrific thing.
On the one hand, it seems to me as a bystander, like kind of cruel and unusual punishment to come up against people you are ostensibly competing for places in the same class and need to collaborate. But I was recently at an event at Cornell's NYC campus, and they kind of did the same thing with attendees at the event, and it worked beautifully. And they got a lot of great ideas, and obviously they weren't competing cutthroat to get into a highly competitive MBA program, but that sort of mix of competition and collaboration, I think I've seen in the years since these schools have rolled them out, seems to be working. I'm curious to hear what your thoughts are. And I did mention to Cornell that, or I asked if maybe this might become a part of their application process. They were no comment at the time.
I think one of the things that can be challenging about the team-based process or group interviews is that just logistically, it's not so easy to pull off. And so I think, you know, when you're Wharton asking a bunch of kids to come to campus, most people will sort of drop everything and get on a plane because they're dying to attend. I think, you know, but it still presents a logistical challenge for the school because they do some of them off-site in hub cities. And you know, it's one thing to have interviews scheduled by each candidate. It's a whole other thing when you've got to kind of group together, you know, five or six individuals who have applied. With that said, kind of logistics aside, I think that the schools that are using these new kind of group interviews are happy. I mean, it's been several years now that Wharton has had this, you know, team-based discussion and play. And for Ross, I think we're now in the third year or so. So it's definitely something that we haven't seen schools kind of walk away from once they've started it. And I would think that, you know, at a place like Wharton, if it wasn't yielding results for them, they would move on to the next thing. So, because they've, you know, proven to be quite innovative in their admissions process over the years. I think it's a good thing. The schools are getting a lot out of it. And I do think one of the most interesting aspects when you talk to candidates who've gone through this type of interview is that they almost universally say that there was a real spirit of camaraderie. And I think people all just sort of recognize that, hey, we've made it this far. Let's take off the gloves and work together and just maximize our chances of getting in, because, you know, it's in most cases when you make it to the interview phase, your odds of admissions have increased substantially from where they were when you first applied, right? So I think most people have a kind of, we're in this together, let's do the best we can. And I think they also recognize that any behavior that might attempt to kind of, you know, cut off some of the competition at the knees or something is just not going to play well in terms of that candidate's admissions chances anyway. So overall, I think it's been a positive. Again, logistically, it's challenging for the schools to work out, and that's probably what's preventing a lot of programs from doing it. But those that are seem to be enjoying the data that it's giving them, and it's helping them make decisions.
And we should add that at Ross, it is completely optional to take part in the group-based discussion,
yes,
which involves being on campus. But they do encourage it, and Sujin Kwan, the admissions director there, will say that it just provides a further data point that helps her team make decisions.
Right, and I would say that they're saying that it's optional, and I believe them when they say it's optional. But I would say if you're applying to Ross and you really want to go there, and you have the ability to get to campus and do it, it's certainly a worthwhile exercise and will only, you know, help your chances. I mean, it's sort of like what we discussed in the earlier segment about open interviews, where a school allows you to sign up for an interview. Obviously, you want to take advantage of that. So I think to the extent that people can get themselves to Ross's campus for the group interview, they should do so.
On a lighter note, and I didn't invite you to prepare for this, and for this I apologize, what should people be wearing to their interviews?
That's actually a great question, and it's one that I've been asked many a time over the years, and there's like such a range of opinion on this, but I have a pretty strict set of rules that I advise people to follow. A business school interview almost always requires business attire. And so, you know, when in doubt, if there's any doubt at all, always better to overdress than underdress. And so I always advise, you know, suit and a tie for guys and a suit for gals. Like I just think that, you know, unless you've been explicitly instructed that it's dressed down or something, I really think you want to go in well-dressed. I do think that there are cases where you've got an alumni interview and the alum says, let's meet at a Starbucks on a Sunday morning, and tells you, just come in casual dress, or, you know, then fine. You know, obviously heed their instruction. But generally speaking, when in doubt, put a suit on. I mean, you only have to do this a couple of times in the admissions process if you're applying to a handful of schools, and so it's worth it. I would say another thing that we talk about when it comes to attire and presentation is, you know, avoid sort of the flashy brand stuff. I mean, this isn't the time to bust out the kind of giant Gucci gold necklace or to lather on the aftershave or the perfume. You don't want to be remembered for how you smelled in any way, or and you don't want to be remembered for what you were wearing, really, right? I mean, you don't want to wear the Miami Vice white suit or something, you know. I mean, this is just keep it conservative. Ideally, they're focused on you and not your wardrobe.
I'm just going to point out for those of you who cannot see Graham, I have almost never seen him in anything other than jeans. So hearing him recommend a suit speaks volumes. And yes. I would agree completely that, you know, you can't go the costs of being too formal far outweigh the cost of being too informal. Another sort of softball question. What about timing your interview? I mean, some of the people who are having these interviews are people who have perhaps interviewed for one or two jobs so far in their life. Do you want to be early? Do you want to be right on time? Or do you want to be stressing out because your train was late and you're not sure you're going to make it?
You definitely don't want to be late. That probably goes without saying. I recommend getting on site like a half hour before your interview, maybe wandering around the campus. I mean, if it is a campus-based interview. I mean, look, you know, in this day and age, it's easy to kill time, right? Everyone has a smartphone. They can do their email or whatever they need to do. And so you don't really have any reason not to kind of get to this, you know, pretty big event on time. I would say if it's on a campus and you're thinking about, well, at what moment should I introduce myself to the receptionist and get into the waiting area, I would say like 15 minutes prior is perfect. I do understand that people don't want to be sitting in the waiting room for like a half an hour. The school staff might sort of be a little annoyed that you're so early because maybe they have, you know, other folks that are waiting and limited capacity to kind of host everyone. But there's another reason that you don't necessarily want to sit around for half an hour prior in the waiting area. And that would be because if you're there with other candidates, it can be stressful because invariably you're going to discuss where else are you applying. And, you know, people get nervous kind of comparing notes. And if the woman next to you has a GMAT score that's twice the number you received on the exam, that could, you know, lower your confidence level heading into your interview. So show up, you know, 15 minutes or so prior. Take a seat and just be on time for sure.
That raises an interesting question. Do you advise pre-interview chit-chat topics? Do you think people should steer clear of the obvious? What's your score and where else you're applying? And come in with a who won the Super Bowl? I mean, that's right. A little too easy, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, now this clearly applies mostly in the context of campus-based interviews, but that's, you know, obviously a large percentage of MBA interviews. I would say, yeah, better off to make small talk. I mean, you just, you know, you don't really want to get into, you know, comparing notes with fellow candidates about how competitive they are, no matter how tempting it might be to kind of survey the waiting room and see who has the highest test score or something. So yeah, definitely small talk. Where'd you come in from? Where are you staying? Are you going to a class? And I do recommend, I mean, when people go to a campus for an interview, it would be foolish to just show up for the interview and then leave afterwards. Like, I really think you want to avail yourself of everything that these schools put on offer for candidates coming for an interview, which usually involves, you know, visiting a class, getting a campus tour, you know, maybe even in some cases meeting with a professor in the domain that you're kind of most focused on. You can, you know, send emails, try to get a meeting. So try to make at least a morning out of it, or an afternoon, or even a full day if you can. And, you know, some people have friends who are in these programs that they can connect with. So making a full day of it is a great way to go about it. And I think the admissions committees don't claim to keep track of this, but I think, you know, showing up and going to an info session, going to a class, you know, getting a tour, it certainly doesn't hurt your chances that they see your face around the campus for the day.
I think that's a great point. Thank you. So for anyone just joining us, we have tackled open versus invitation only interviews, blind versus non-blind interviews, and we have taken sort of a deeper dive into the team-based discussion interviews that more and more schools are starting to incorporate. Graham, if you've still got time for us, I would love to get into some of the even more idiosyncratic school-specific permutations of the interview. Starting with MIT Sloan, which has in recent years added its own new twist with a pre-interview essay. Basically, people, once they have been invited to interview, are asked to answer a second essay question, a brief one, 250 words or less. How do you advise students who have made it to this extra step in the process, and how can they use it to tee up their interview, or should they?
Yeah, I actually like this process. I think, you know, in the case of MIT, I really like that it comes prior to the interview. And the reason I like it is because, having worked in admissions, I'm always interested in ways to kind of optimize the process and make it more efficient. And I think this is a brilliant way on their part to basically pre-screen candidates that they want to interview, and then get only that subset of candidates to write a short essay. You can imagine the scenario the way it was before. They would have read that second essay, I think it's the second essay in the application in this case. They would have had to read that essay for everyone who applied. So I think on some levels, this is MIT finding an innovative way to streamline the process and really hear more from the people that they want to interview, that they're interested in. You have to keep that in mind. That sometimes what's driving these process innovations isn't necessarily fully focused on the candidate. It could also just be focused a little bit on the admissions team and their need to kind of have more of a triage in place. So there's that aspect of it. I think the other thing that's happening here in the case of Sloan is that, you know, the question they ask requires folks to think a bit about what MIT is, sort of what their reputation is, what they're looking for in terms of students. So, and then it asks them to kind of, you know, write a short essay about how something that the candidate has done in their past aligns with the mission of the school. And so that's, you know, it has this sort of twofold purpose, again, where obviously it gives the candidate a chance to share another moment from their past that might influence the admissions decision. But I also think it gives the school a chance to kind of ensure that everyone they're going to interview has familiarized themselves with the school's mission and the kind of ethos of that campus, and what it is that the school is trying to accomplish. And so I think it has those two purposes. I really like it, again, because it's almost like a great exercise. You have to submit it, if memory serves, within 24 hours of the interview. 24 hours prior to the interview. And so it sort of, you know, forces you to kind of do at least one thing to prepare for your interview, which is write this essay, learn a little bit more about MIT Sloan, and come in with the right mindset. So I think it's a great idea for many of those reasons.
Yeah, and to elaborate on that, I think they try to invite people to interview at least 1 week in advance. So they've got a week to complete the interview, the secondary essay rather, and then 24 hours before the scheduled interview to upload it.
That's right, yeah.
Another school that kind of riffs in a similar, perhaps opposite fashion, is Harvard, which has its post-interview reflection. It's been around a while now. It debuted in 2012. It gives people a chance to say what they perhaps didn't say in the interview. What else do you think it offers to folks who have been lucky enough to secure and go through a Harvard Business School interview?
Yeah, I really like this one too. I think it's, again, allowing the admissions team to get more data from the candidates that they're most interested in. And it also, as Dee Leopold, who first introduced this exercise, pointed out, it gives the candidates the last word, right? So, you know, typically you go to an interview and you walk out with all kinds of questions in your head. How did I do? And then you kind of play Monday morning quarterback and revisit everything that you said. And there's this kind of nervousness. And so what HBS has tried to accomplish is give candidates a chance to kind of frame the interview a little bit, have kind of the last word. So I really like it. The other thing that's fascinating to me about it is, much like a team-based discussion gives a candidate a flavor of, you know, what an MBA experience might be like, the post-interview reflection that has to be handed in within 24 hours gives you, you know, kind of a sense of like a homework assignment. Or again, as Dee pointed out when they first introduced it, her view was, if you're working in the business world, you go and, you know, maybe you go and make a pitch to a potential client, or you're raising money or whatever it might be, you know, you're writing that follow-up email within 24 hours because you want to stay top of mind with whoever it was you were visiting with. And so it kind of is designed to simulate real life, you know, so this is a good exercise. And I think, you know, again, I feel like it gives candidates the opportunity to really frame what was discussed in the interview, to throw in, you know, a point or two that they didn't have the opportunity to make, or to perhaps underline certain things that were discussed in the interview that they felt were really important and, you know, perhaps played well for their candidacy. So I like this exercise as well. I will say when it was first introduced, there was a lot of stress around it. As you might imagine, a lot of people applying to HBS have admissions consultants and friends and family who've kind of looked over everything that they've produced for the school in hopes of, you know, maximizing their chance of getting in. And then the candidate goes to the interview and has like 24 hours to sort of whip something up and send it off. And it doesn't really allow for perhaps the same level of review and revision. But I think that's also at play here, in that I think HBS is looking to some extent for something that's perhaps not perfectly polished like an application essay might be. So again, I'm a fan of it. And it's as you said, it's been around since 2012. So clearly the school is finding it useful.
I have another sort of out of left field question. Is there any reason any applicant to any school who's gone through an interview shouldn't also submit a post-interview reflection?
I mean, I think, you know, in most cases you want to submit a thank you note, and there is an aspect of a thank you that can be a little post-interview reflection-esque, because you, in writing the thank you, you always get a chance, you know, in a paragraph or two to kind of underline something you were happy to have spoken about or something you were interested in learning that the interviewer shared with you. So there is that aspect. I would not recommend that people go rogue and start, you know, submitting post-interview reflections to every school that they have applied to or interviewed at. I think the issue is that, you know, schools have a process, and whenever you kind of go off the rails a bit, you're basically telling the admissions committee that you think you're more important than everyone else who has followed the rules, and that you merit more time or something. And that's not usually a wise strategy. So I would say send a thank you note, which, you know, most candidates will do, again, within 24 hours. And that's typically done by email. And certainly infuse that thank you with more than just kind of thanks for your time. It was a great, you know, great to interview, and I can't wait for the admissions decision. It's got to be more than that. So you do get a chance to, you know, offer some of the reflection type stuff. But I would not submit a full on, you know, like basically take HBS's instructions and follow them at every other school or something.
Got it. Another school that has its own unique component to the interview process is London Business School. Applicants there get to provide an impromptu 5-minute presentation that is assigned as part of the interview. You are across the pond from those of us here in the States. Do you have greater insights into what your neighbors over in London are looking for through this presentation?
Yes, I think it's not so different from what Ross does with, you know, kind of giving a team a set of words and asking them to kind of come up with a story on the spot, or, you know, this kind of impromptu thing. But what LBS does is they'll give you a kind of, it's usually a pretty softball question. You know, they've asked things like, should employers dismiss an employee for writing criticism on social networking websites about the company they work for? Or even, I mean, some of them are kind of big picture things like, there was one about, internet piracy with respect to music. There's been one about, what items would you put in a time capsule about humanity? If you had to pick just three, some people call it kind of a case or a presentation, but I don't want people to confuse that with the type of stuff that McKinsey does, where they ask you a more complex kind of business problem to solve. These tend to be a bit more open-ended, and again, I think all that LBS is looking for is there's obviously no right answer to these questions, but what they are looking for is your ability to take a few minutes, prepare some thoughts, and make a short presentation. Because candidates are basically given the question, then they're given some time to think about it, and then I think it's about 5 minutes or so, and then they're given the floor to kind of talk through their ideas. And I think it really comes down to, can you coherently make a case for a point of view, or, you know, basically express yourself? And have it not be something that was sort of pre-planned. Like, everyone can answer the question, why do you want an MBA? Because people know that's coming, and they've probably prepared for it if they're smart. But if someone says to you, what three items would you put in a time capsule about humanity? In theory, you haven't prepared that kind of question, and so you're forced to think on your feet. They just want to see how articulate you are. Can you kind of make an argument? How are your presentation skills?
Another school, INSEAD, which has campuses in three different parts of the world, also has a different twist. It provides the admissions committee with two additional independent perspectives on each applicant by asking each of those applicants to interview not once but twice.
Right.
Can you talk a little bit more about this? Is it completely unfair, or is it brilliant?
I mean, it's time consuming, right? Because, you know, again, so INSEAD is a school where interviews are conducted pretty much exclusively by the alumni community. And so, you know, if you're invited to interview, you set up two different interviews with two alums. I think the positive in this is that, you know, sometimes there's a little bit of a quality control issue for schools that exclusively use alumni in their interview process. It's hard to manage a kind of team that's scattered all across the globe of kind of, you know, former students who are conducting interviews. And so part of what's happening, I think, is that it gives the admissions committee two separate points of view. And probably weeds out, you know, some of the real flukes. If there's a, you know, alum that's kind of a little bit off the reservation and not following script or whatever, they'll get word of that. I think there's another component to it that's important as well, which is almost like a marketing component. So, you know, if you're a candidate, I've always found that the more alums that you come in contact with, and, you know, the more you kind of learn from them about their experiences, the more enthusiastic you get about the program. At least when we're talking about top schools, where, you know, alumni are generally quite satisfied. And so the chance to sit down with two alums from INSEAD and, you know, to hear about all that they've accomplished post-MBA is a great kind of marketing opportunity for the school as well. So, you know, it is extra work for the candidate and for the committee, because they got to read two interview reports. But I think overall, you know, it's a worthwhile exercise, and INSEE has done it for many, many years, and, you know, you don't hear a lot of complaints from the applicant pool. So I think it's just another, you know, kind of innovative way to frame the interview. And truth be told, the interview is really important. I think, as I said earlier, essays and materials that are submitted where you have lots of time to assemble them are often, you know, they're going to be universally pretty great across the board if you know, certainly when we're talking about the candidates that are truly qualified. And so the interview is an increasingly important component of MBA admissions. And so INSEAD's getting kind of two data points there.
And in conclusion, I'd like you to weigh in on one more sort of anomaly in the interview space, which is HEC Paris. And it's kind of an LBS meets INSEAD approach in that there are two interviews, and in each interview, the applicant is asked to present a sort of mini presentation. What's your familiarity with this approach to interviews, and what advice do you have to offer candidates?
Yeah, I think you're right. It's sort of it's just a combination of what INSEAD is doing with what LBS does. So I think the advice remains the same. Obviously, it does up the ante a little bit in terms of, you know, it's a little more stressful. Obviously, two interviews requires more time on the part of the candidate and more preparation. And then the fact that each interview for HEC has a presentation in it, again, you know, you've got to be on your toes, and you have to be comfortable enough to think spontaneously and come up with, a presentation and pitch it. But again, it's pretty similar. So anyone, preparing for an INSEAD interview or interviews is going to be well-versed in what HEC is looking for in that domain. And anyone who's applied to LBS will also have, you know, experienced the presentation. So there's nothing kind of new there. It's just, yeah, they happen to be combining two elements that are used at other programs too.
Terrific. Well, I have about 8 more interview-related questions that I'd love to ask you, but our time has come to an end, so I will save those for our second podcast. Thank you so much for joining us for this inaugural podcast, and I look forward to doing more.
It's been my pleasure. Thanks, Jeanette.
Thanks, Graham.